At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. You're listening to Sirius XM Online and at our website, stevebick.com. Midweek, still doing some Derby Oaks recapping. Day three, there's a lot to digest. And have barely looked at much else. We're getting there. We're getting there. Steve Asmussen yesterday, that was helpful to talk about the Pat Day Mile and more. Brad Cox, we got some Brad Cox in. Brad with the big. I never know if I'm on the air like that. I don't know if when Brad says that Essential Quality is not going to participate in the Preakness, I said that feels like something newsworthy, and I put it out there, and I didn't realize that he really hadn't told anybody, so that circulated quickly, and the King Fury can't even say. That he demurred out of Preakness. He has not recovered, essentially, from this illness. So nothing for him. That leaves us, and I'll give you where things stand on that topic before we do anything else. And toward the end of the week, when Marty McGee swings through, and we'll go back and have a follow-up conversation with Jay on Friday, too, with Jay Pridman. But here's where you stand as of right now, and this is with Brad Cox pending decisions on Mandaloon and Caddo River. Because, he did not, right? It didn't sound completely, firm on either of them going forward. So Medina Spirit, of course, everything's squared away there. And then you fold in Concert Tour being confirmed after that work on Monday. In fact, with Baffert additionally naming Mike Smith. And that, I thought that was an important note. Because with Steve Asmussen considering Midnight Bourbon and with Mike Smith moving to Baffert, that would open up Midnight Bourbon for Ricardo Santana. So I thought that was newsworthy in and of itself, depending on what happens. And what they end up settling on with Midnight Bourbon. I would like to see him, come back in Baltimore. So, Joe Talamo, and I wanted to go back and see if Santana had ridden him ever, and he had not. He did not. Started with Corey Lannery, then Corrales, then Jose Ortiz, and then the three starts with Talamo. Interesting. Might have done well to utilize Talamo, but we'll see what happens there. Chad Brown, of course, is set with Crowded Trade, and Ron Bauer, who's been pointing for this for weeks, the Japanese trainee France Godina, and Dwayne Lucas now considering Ram, the winner of that opener on Saturday, and you heard Todd Pletcher mention Unbridled Honor, who you'll know later today, not that this is written in stone either, if Unbridled Honor enters the Peter Pan, there's no guarantee that necessarily would run, but Unbridled Honor. So right now, a working list of 8 or 9 for Preakness. That's where things stand, and we'll see if anybody else gets added to the possibles, right? All right, so there's your Preakness update. There were a few things yesterday that you can't go a day without a few different moving parts and today headline type conversations. We got New York. I wanted to try to get Pat McKenna. Pat's tied up today. In fact, he's coming up here. So we'll get Pat tomorrow ahead of the 10 a.m. kickoff of sales of Belmont tickets. And here's what came out yesterday for those that are hoping and anticipating coming to Elmont for the Belmont Stakes. Tickets will go on sale. There's some advance sale for those that bought that bought Belmont seats last year, Belmont tickets, and couldn't attend. They and some NairaBets customers, you probably got an email outlining some advance ticketing, but the vast majority of tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. And I explained this morning to some people that responded to Dave Grenning from yesterday. Dave, reporting this news about the Belmont seating. The capacity, the way in which the capacity is measured, is the facility quantity, the total, the published facility resource that lists just under 33,000 seats at Belmont. The backyard does not count toward that because there's not the option of walk around general admission. That's not an option. They can only utilize whatever percentage the state health officials are recommending. And the good news is that number moves from 20% to 33% next week or in 2 weeks. I think the 19th was the date. So the published, and I put this up on that thread where people were responding to Dave yesterday. I'm going to tell you exactly what the facilities provided is the way it's published. Total seating capacity, 32,941. That is the published capacity for seating at Belmont. They're just a tick under 33,000. There's another 2,300 listed for trackside dining and 700 for other dining options. So there's another 3,000. So the estimate and the expectation is that if 33% is the figure for early June, that about 11,000 tickets can be sold, be allowed under the state's guidance. Pat will, further detail that. It doesn't seem likely that between May 19th and June 5th, June 5th is Belmont Stakes Day. It doesn't seem likely that in those couple of weeks there would be another raising of the percentage. I think it's much more likely that percentage gets raised before Saratoga. So attendance at Belmont will be 11,000, you know, plus connections, plus, I suppose, I'll ask Pat that tomorrow. Remind me to do that. I mean, does that mean 11,000 minus the people that are connected to horses? Or can they, you know, does that 11,000 count afterward? So, and then, you know, people have been as, I think, as interested in an answer on Saratoga as they are for Belmont Stakes Day. There's no way to know yet where, you know, where that number is going to be and how much of the backyard is going to be applicable. We just, you know, it's a little too early to tell. You probably won't know that detail until, you know, closer to the end of June. And yeah, but obviously, at the least, at the very least, it would seem that you're going to get the minimum is 33%. If it doesn't move from that percentage of Saratoga's capacity, and that, you know, it's a little bit, probably a little bit lower than this, I would, in terms of the seating, obviously, than Belmont. So we'll get that from Pat tomorrow, and he'll tell you how the Saratoga portion of the equation is going to unfold. But if you want to come to Belmont, you're probably going to be able to come. That's my guess. We're going to talk in about 10 minutes to Mike Campbell in Illinois. So I won't provide too many details about the Arlington news yesterday. But the Arlington Board of Trustees, the Arlington Heights, the village, they passed an ordinance yesterday that would prevent CDI from putting conditions, restrictions, on what a buyer of Arlington can or cannot do with the property. So we'll visit that in about 10 minutes, and Mike will tell you where things stand, because there is no shortage. I can tell you from being at Churchill this week, there is no shortage of people that are interested in buying the property and continuing it as Arlington Park. That also includes, if you saw the piece at Pollock Report, Roy Arnold, who had been president and CEO of Arlington in the aughts. He's trying to put together a package, and Mike Campbell himself is involved with that. So Mike will bring you up to date on everything that's happening at Arlington, because it does not seem like the fate and that things are absolutely, you know, sealed, delivered, and determined. All right. So we'll visit that first. We're going to catch up too with Brendan Walsh, he said whenever Casey called him yesterday, he'd answer the phone and it would click off. So we're going to try to get Brendan Walsh in here this hour. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Looking forward to that and letting Sid riff on the pedigree of your Derby winner. And, you know, the pedigree, people are, you know, acting like just because the horse was not expensive, that, you know, it was, you know, it's not a good pedigree, and he's common. That's not exactly true. That's really not an accurate. He might not have been commercial. There's a difference between being commercial and being well received. I mean, it doesn't. you know, Britannico wasn't flashy and wasn't a, you know, a headline grabbing new sire. And at the same time, he's by Giants Causeway. And as Todd Pletcher talked on Monday, had a nice career. I mean, it's not like his resume and his pedigree didn't qualify him for a chance at stud. And then when you look at the mare, being by Brilliant Speed, even that is a little bit of an oddity, given, you know, the unfortunate, you know, demise of Brilliant Speed. So who knows what kind of a sire Brilliant Speed was going to be, but certainly being by Dynaformer doesn't hurt. So I take a little bit of issue with this characterization that Medina Spirit's a commonly bred. So we'll let Sid tear into that, all right? And we'll certainly also we'll talk Malathat. Got to get Malathat's conversation in as well. A few other things. Bill Downs. Actually, I got to reach out to Bill and get Bill lined up here for an Indiana check-in. They got a nice little card this afternoon. I didn't expect to, but I ended up printing out the fourth through eighth. There's two quarter horse races that end the card today, but sequence for the pick five races four through eight, and it's good. You've got a open allowance. We'll see about turf there. They got yanked off yesterday. That horse of Asmussen's. Well, you'll have to keep, but just put it on your watch list. Country Time, easy one to remember. Think Lemonade. Then there's an Indiana Maiden Group for 10 going a mile. Fillies and mares. There's a maiden special for Indiana Breds going 7.5 on the grass. Indiana Bred conditional allowance, short on the dirt. And then a open company 7.5 turf allowance for fillies and mares. It's a nice, it's actually a nice sequence. And it's funny, I was talking to Andy before the show. And I said to him, because I have got tomorrow's pick six, Nick Tamaro will join us tomorrow, and we'll get Nick's recap of Derby Oaks weekend. We'll get his analysis. Today, Paul Matisse in hour three, and we'll let Paul riff as we do every year. It's always worthwhile just letting him kind of free associate and walk through his weekend, what went right, what went wrong, and what to learn from it. But when Nick's with us tomorrow, we'll go through that pick six carryover sequence, 58,000, I think. And, the second week of the Belmont meet, second pick six carryover. It's okay by me. It looks like it could be a little challenging putting together your ticket for a reasonable amount. There's a maiden 20 that starts it off for fillies, and the thing is just murky and mysterious. And then there's a maiden special going a mile and 3/8 on the turf. So that one is all about who wants the distance, and there's certainly a Christophe Clement trainee with Joel Rosario. A Zoffany gelding out of a Dynaformer mare that figures to be, this is the race I brought up with Todd. He's got the Run Happy sibling prayer book in there. There's also in that race, this is the six tomorrow, the mile and 3/8 on the grass for maidens. Tom Bush has got one for Arnmore, and this is an Animal Kingdom colt out of Tutti Paese, who ran kind of evenly in the debut at Keeneland in April. 6-1 with Javier. So it's a full field, field of 10. Take out the MTO, assuming I think we're okay. I think we got a lot of rain today, but and this rained all night. I got up very early, and it was pouring. But anyway, the sequence tomorrow is might be a little tricky building tickets tomorrow for that carryover. But we're excited about this having real, you know, the real carryovers again. I'll save the Indiana conversation for Bill Downs. All right. So I looked at a few things, but Genaro Garcia, if you didn't see it, he won three yesterday, and he's winning at a steady clip. As we'll start to get into the teeth of the Indiana season. Let's reach for Mike Campbell, and we'll talk about this news from yesterday and what it means. And the people rooting for, obviously the people, you know, are rooting for Arlington to survive. I mean, that goes without, you know, literally without saying. So I'm anxious to hear what Mike, you know, what Mike thinks the real potential is, because I'm sure a lot of people think it's a fait accompli at this point, but we'll see. I should mention too, in hour three, right ahead of Paul Matisse, Brian Bouye, because a reminder that it's Hall of Fame Day. And as we wait for Mike Campbell, a very sad note late yesterday afternoon, early evening, that crossed the Twitter timeline. Louis Carvajal let everybody know, sadly, that Ray Mamone had passed away. And Mamone, who was in his late 80s, you know, kind of came to the fore. You know, he's been around. He had been around, and he'd been breeding some horses for a number of years, and kind of regionally, you know, Jersey and Delaware and Pennsylvania, and, you know, came, I think, to a more national prominence with Imperial Hint. And he gave Louis Carvajal the chance, and Louis absolutely capitalized. And sad, best warm thoughts to the family and to everybody involved. I mean, we really had a lot of fun with Imperial Hint. You know, earned over $2 million and was multiple, what, four grade ones, two Vosburgs and two Vosburgs and two Vanderbilts. You know, had a couple of tries. He wanted to go internationally, and you know, the one trip went completely wrong when he got sick in Dubai. You know, Louis Carvajal is a lovely guy, and you can tell he was broken up by this. So thoughts to the Mamones, and it was really fun. I put up some pictures from the first Vanderbilt win, I guess 2018, I think. And kind of spent part of the, you know, the subsequent celebration with them. So thoughts go out to the Mamones. He's a good owner, and he bred, and he loved the game. He loved to be around it. And he gave Louis a chance. That goes a long way. Hopefully we're a long way from the end of Arlington Park. And Mike Campbell joins us, and for years Mike has visited and provided updates on typically the gaming landscape and, you know, that topic, which went on and on and on. This is a new concern, considering that the future of Arlington as a racetrack kind of hangs in the balance. And yesterday afternoon, seemingly a lifeline, a ray of hope. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me on.
No, I appreciate the opportunity and to update everybody on what the village did, Arlington Heights, with a you know, with an ordinance that might, you know, help get Arlington into new hands and to continue as a racetrack. Tell everybody what yesterday's news meant and this group that potentially wants to step in, you with Roy Arnold, and what's happening.
Well, with respect to the Board of Trustees and the mayor and the village manager of Arlington Heights, we have appealed to them for over a year now that there might be another possibility rather than just accepting the fate of the closure of Arlington Park. We communicated with them that we were working on individuals that would be interested in maintaining live racing here. And it culminated into the Board of Trustees meeting and first of all, providing the understanding that in their heart of hearts, they wanted live racing here. They wanted to have it continue. And I think they sent a clear message to CDI that their wishes would be first and foremost in any planning that took place here, and that they set down some pretty strong principles about the use of this land, and it isn't going to be the owner of the property, CDI, is not going to have the last say on how this property is going to be used. And in addition to that, which is even more startling, if you will, is they set down conditions that that CDI could not set down restrictions on the use of this property relative to live racing and or gaming that would take place here.
Is that, from a legal standpoint, and you know, real estate law, I didn't take in college, and my Series 3 or whatever it is, is that enough legally to hamstring them?
Steve, I couldn't answer that question. I did get an opinion because I knew this was coming, and the opinion that I got, a legal opinion that I received back, was that it is within their authority to do so. That there is case law that cites that they can restrict in that fashion.
How about that? The other thing about this, I thought, Mike, that was very noteworthy was how encouraging and how specific the village board was about preferring that Arlington remain as a racetrack as opposed to being developed in whatever, you know, commercial or residential fashion an alternate future might hold. It seems that, you know, they feel that the racetrack is paramount to, you know, the village's reputation and awareness, you know, internationally, that the identity of Arlington Heights, in fact, is tied to the racetrack. And I thought that was a nice message.
It was truly refreshing. I've been promoting that concept, you know, ever since this announcement was made, and it seemingly, you know, I wasn't getting a lot of traction. I didn't feel, but it was heartwarming the other day to hear so many of those trustees say that how important the racetrack was to themselves, and in private, they've explained to me that, you know, they want live racing to continue here.
Well, that's part one, and that might you know, lay the groundwork for an alternate you know, an alternate opportunity for new ownership. Let's get into that portion of the discussion. And I actually exchanged some text with you over the weekend, because Saturday in conversation with, let's just say, some prominent horse people and prominent owners, breeders, and stakeholders in the game, and they talked about discussion around the industry from people with means that you know, are very interested in ponying up and, you know, and buying the racetrack. And then word came that Roy Arnold, and you're associated with Roy's bid, is ready to put something forward as well. Where does this portion of the discussion stand?
Well, Roy and I will entertain all offers. We have been working with principals to close that, the financing for this. It is moving slower than what I would have anticipated, but it's a big project, Steve. And what we've done is we've sealed the end of it where the industrial and residential side, we have commitments, letters of intent from major players, major industrial, major residential developers to offset the cost of this facility. This property has to be divided. There's no question about that. That the community wants that. And so the racing end of it is very complicated, Steve, because not only do you have to buy the property, which is more than half the price of the total development, but then you have to build a whole new barn area because industrial will take down these barns. And these barns have had it anyway. They were built in 1927, and they're not usable anymore. And so that is, roughly comes in at about $50 million. Then on top of that, there's about $25 million of improvements to this grandstand, according to the individual that runs the backstretch here. Then you have a problem with seed money for the purse account. There'll be no opportunity here to develop a purse account because you would have no host time. You would have no income from dark time. So you have to seed the purse account. So you're looking at essentially twice the commitment that the development in the industrial, or the residential and industrial side has to it. So it's easy to talk about. You know, there are a lot of people have had conversations with me that they want to be a part of this. But when they understand the total cost of running this operation, a lot of them quickly back away.
What is the timetable that you're facing? And has there been any further discussion with representatives from CDI since the shareholders call last month, or now it's actually probably 2 months, was floated? And actually, I do think that they did address this in the most recent call when they talked about their desire or the potential to transfer the licensing and that. I think I even saw Mike, that they can't necessarily just take the Arlington license, you know, pell mell and move it somewhere.
Yeah, that is so erroneous for them to lead anybody to believe that they're going to take Arlington Park and put it out in a cornfield someplace so that they can keep their ADW license. Through Twin Spires is really what they're after. It's laughable. And this commission, I doubt very seriously they're going to go for that. You can't, on one hand, say we're going to quote a world-renowned property, and then we're going to take that license so we can sell bets to Twin Spires, and we're going to move it to a cornfield someplace. I don't think that's going to bode too well for them, but we'll see. It'll be a fight I'm willing to have, I can tell you that.
timing wise, where do things have to move? I mean, I suppose under one of the scenarios you kind of hinted at, if there's no racing in let's say in 2022, is that a death knell? Is it possible that there's a pause of racing while this gets worked out, or is it imperative that, you know, racing continue no matter what?
Well, I don't have all the answers to that. If I were Churchill Downs and knowing how they operate, they're going to take every last dime out of this place, I would assume. And so what, if I were them, I would apply for licensing racing dates in 2022. I would get my $4.5 million in recapture, and then I'd make an announcement that, sorry, that we're out of business and not conduct racing. That's one option they might consider. I think our commission is ready for that option, to deal with that option. The other option is that they could just run a bulldozer through the turf course, which pretty much ends it if that's what they choose to do. They can't tear down the grandstand because that would require building permits, and I think the municipality would have something to say about that. There's lots of options for them. The other option is, Steve, that they could just sell it to somebody that has an interest in live racing. It isn't going to hurt the Splains. I think that's the traditional understanding, is that they're worried about the 10th license that they bought 61% in, which is 13 miles from here, and millions of people between each one. I don't understand a brand whose brand is racing that doesn't want to contribute to racing like this. I was tipped off yesterday that at Hollywood Park, that when those bids came in to sell that property, that they actually took the second bid, highest bid. The bid that was the highest bid was from a Native American tribe that wanted to have live racing. So they closed it so that they didn't have to have live racing. I don't understand the mentality. I don't get it. Maybe somebody else does.
No. This has been an ongoing tale, really. I mean, when you mentioned Hollywood, you could also discuss Calder as part of this this scenario.
They're still trying to decouple in Florida. It just goes on and on. You know, where is the contribution to racing? Where is the corporate contribution to racing with a brand whose brand has the two largest races in the world plus Breeder Cups on Austin? It's astonishing to me. But we're prepared in Illinois. We'll deal with it according to what's dealt us. It's a different legislature. It's a different Senate president. It's a different Speaker of the House. It's a different governor. And I intend to work with the entire legislature to bring out a good outcome to this. Those of us that live here and love racing in this state, love racing in general, our families have been a part of racing, we're going to assist that racing continue here.
There's certainly going to be the support, overwhelming support from, you know, from horse players and fans and other stakeholders that, you know, understand the historic value and presence of Arlington.
We need them on our side, Steve. I'll tell you what, this is a world-renowned racing facility here.
Yep.
I hear this time and time again that this grandstand is meaningful to those that have visited it, that they see it as one of the most profound, best-built grandstands with a better aesthetics than most of the racetracks. I just can't imagine. I would, you know, where are the shareholders of Churchill Downs? You know, don't let this happen. This is an easy thing. We're not going to harm anybody. We're not going to do anything harmful to intrude on the Rivers Casino. This is the people that come to watch horses race. They come to watch horses race. They'll never be gaming here. That time has come and gone for gaming at Arlington Park. But yes, they can have a sports book here. Something has to help support purses. There's no doubt about that. And there'll be other technologies that are employed through the years, I'm sure. We'll be able to utilize that. But we've got a strong support from the municipality, strong support from state government. And I'd like to see that the racing fans of America and the shareholders of CDI Don't let this happen. It doesn't have to happen like it happened to Calder and like it happened to Hollywood Park. This is preventable. Let's prevent it from taking place, but I need some help.
What do you suggest, Mike, on that front? What can aside from people with with big checkbooks lining in behind you and Roy? What else can people do?
I think it's a shareholder issue. I think they demand of their leadership that this place is allowed to. What are we really asking for? We have the right plan for the community and for the state. Because we've already thought about the industrial and residential side and the entertainment value that it adds to Arlington Heights. So now what we're asking for is allow live racing to continue. It's that simple. Don't take out a monument to racing, a world-renowned facility. Don't run a bulldozer through it. Don't run a bulldozer through the turf course on the last day of the meet. Don't do a mid-field here like Mayor Daley did at one of our airports here downtown. Don't destroy it. Do we have to destroy monuments these days? I don't get it. This is a monument to the world. And we're talking, to even contemplate its destruction is criminal.
That's the conclusion that people have pretty much had, since this possible fate first was raised. So Mike, I was encouraged by what I saw last night and this morning with these reports, and also as I texted you over the weekend, from what I heard specifically Saturday at Derby in regards to some of the names involved that are interested in getting something accomplished. So,
well, listen, like I said, we need all the help we can get. I think there's a lot of interest in this. My goal is to have the highest bid, when CBI reviews these bids, and it will be a combination of industrial, residential, entertainment, hotel, and live racing. And I need the support of racing fans across America and shareholders of CBI to make sure that that's a transparent bid and one that the second highest bidder, just because it has live racing, or the highest bidder, just because it has live racing, doesn't end up with the property. That would be a mistake for the world to make.
Mike Campbell, I'm obviously rooting for, and whatever we can do, we're happy to pass along and encourage and update and whatever the message that is required to get people behind on the right side of this.
Well, I just like to add one more thing, Steve. And
sure.
Roy Arnold's involvement in this. These people are, he and on the development side, these people are working without any benefit to themselves. They're just trying to do the right thing. It's refreshing, too. I needed Roy because his leadership, to be a colonel in the Marine Corps, you have to be a very smart, hardworking, dedicated guy to pull that off. He is the most ethical man I've ever met in my life. And when I was on the opposite side of the table with him, and often, we'd be in great controversy with each other, and he would turn on a dime. We could have this most vivacious disagreement, and he would turn on a dime and say, "Well, Mike, let's get together and look at this other problem that we have," in a very kind way. He's just a tremendous person. When he was president here, we were selling this signal at unprecedented levels. We had 1 million people go through the turnstiles when he was president here. And a short time later, we had half that many. We had less than half that many. So my management team was the best. He's an individual. He doesn't want to be firsthand, boots on the ground here, but he's willing to be a part of it to pull us out of this 6 feet of horse manure we're in. And, And I can't wait for the opportunity to work with him because he's the guy that can do it for us.
Now, that's encouraging as well. I saw those same reactions from other, you know, other quarters as well, from people hearing that he was involved and helping spearhead the effort. Mike Campbell, best of luck with this. And again, let me know as things progress.
Well, thanks a lot, Steve. Listen, all your help is important. You know, again, I just think that I think that in times of great need, you know, I've seen it happen time and time again where good things happen. But bad things happen only because people see it happening and don't react, don't get involved. It's just time for all of us to step up and prevent this from taking place. So, you know what? I'm just one person, head of a terrific bunch of horsemen that want the best outcome here. But there's many, many more people across this country, I'm sure, that don't want to see this happen. And those are the people we need to hear from.
Arlington Park, and to some degree, listening out there, the fate might be in your hands, and you could help. Mike, I appreciate it, and we'll stay on it and pass along everything that could help, you know, turn the tide and you know, give Arlington a future as a racetrack.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Mike Campbell, everybody, from the Illinois Horseman. We'll stay here, and Brendan Walsh actually pushed back. He's got some horses on the track training, so we'll get to Brendan in hour two, as well as Bill Downs from Indiana. And right now, we'll get in the Derby Oaks Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and Hill and Dale sending a daughter of Curlin into the Oaks winner's circle. Then there's the more interesting pedigree quirkiness of Medina Spirit and the Derby win. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. And yeah. What was your – before we talk pedigree, let's talk the race side of things, your Oaks and Derby impressions.
Well, the Oaks, you know, I had told you about a Curlin exact, didn't happen, but Curlin did win it. Obviously, she was the favorite, and she, you know, ran a heck of a race. It was a great day of racing overall, but it's always nice when you have what looks like a, you know, really nice filly come in and do what she's supposed to do. So, you know, big feather in the cap for Curlin, obviously. Yet another feather in the cap for Curlin. And, you know, what can you say?
We'll go got over
a terrific pedigree. Yeah,
we'll go over the pedigree too in a minute, and you know, there's a lot of familiarity in that page of hers, and then there's the Derby winner, where it's a little bit more obscure, and there's a you know, kind of a theme, Sid, that I mentioned, you know, in anticipation of the visit, that, you know, people were not being dismissive, but just that, oh, he's not well-bred. Well, that's unfair. First of all, some race impressions before we dive into Medina Spirit's page.
Yeah, it's the race impressions, you know, we all thought the pace scenario would be kind of different. I gave you six horses. You know, four of those horses were in the top five. But the two that weren't were, you know, two closers, Borbonic and Dynamic One, whether it's from the pace scenario or just the weak wood. But those were the two wood horses. The Fairgrounds race was extremely formful and impactful in there. And, of course, the winner came from California. where he'd had form with Hot Rod Charlie and Earland pretty much as they had in the Lewis. So the pace scenario, of course, with Rock Your World and Soup and Sandwich didn't materialize as we had anticipated. But we had suggested that this horse, Medina Spirit, would get to the front as well. Of course, he found himself pretty much without too much a company. So that really helped him. And, you know, as we said last week, he's a horse that once he gets to the front, he's extremely tough to pass. You know, I didn't think he was going to win the race, but I thought he'd definitely be, you know, horse for the ticket. And very, very impressive race for, by him. You know, he's just one of those horses that, my impression, not just mine, I guess everybody's, you know, he likes to be hard ridden. He's got this old throwback kind of feel to him. You know, he can ride him really hard. And, he's dead game. He just does not let horses get by him. Kind of reminds me of Affirmed that way. You know, Affirmed, you know, Aladar was always considered the potential horse to be the three-year-old, you know, off their two-year-old forms. And, you know, Affirmed just never, you know, let the other horse pass him. And this horse has that kind of similar feel to him. You know, he just gets there and that try, that fight comes through, and boy, yeah, what a performance.
What you just said, I want to use it actually as the, you know, the jumping point to the horse's pedigree, Sid, because the notion that just because the horse was a $1,000 yearling and, you know, then a $35,000 two-year-old purchase, and we had the extensive visit yesterday with Gary Young, and Gary talked about, you know, his portion of it, and there's been nice documentation on Gail Rice, the breeder, and also Christine Whitman, who pinhooked Medina Spirit. But it's really very silly to claim that this is not a a well-bred horse. Britannico himself, Todd stood up for Britannico on Monday as, you know, as a very nice, you know, stake horse for him and his resume. And he's by Giant's Causeway out of an AP Indy mare. Then there's the Dam, who's by Brilliant Speed, and the only reason people don't know more about Brilliant Speed and we don't have, you know, because we don't have a complete picture. He was killed by a lightning strike in his paddock, and I think had three crops, and so there's no way to know. But he's a Dynaformer and was a wonderful stake horse for Mrs. Weber on both turf and dirt. And Tom Albertrani, and the second Dam is by Unbridled, the third Dam by Holy Bull, the fourth Dam by 49er. I don't know how much more toughness and durability and staying power you would want in a pedigree where, you know, you're looking at these kinds of names. And, you know, this horse might be writing some chapters that that'll have people shaking their heads.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about these types of pedigrees, it's important, and I think you made a really good distinction by bringing those sires in the pedigrees up and so forth. He's got a lot of high-quality stallions. You pointed out Britannico was a multiple grade two winner, grade one placed, Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare. That's a lot of stamina built into it right there, right? And then you pointed out that this horse is Dan by Brilliant Speed, who's by Dyna Former. Second dance by Unbridled, the third dance by Holy Bull, the fourth dance by 49ers. So when you're looking at it that way, there's a lot of class. These are all, you know, name brand stallions. Huge. When people talk about the horse being not well, quote-unquote, not well-bred, they mean that in the commercial sense, and I'll explain that. Like, until you had Medina Spirit, the first three dams had not produced a stakes winner. You had to get to the fourth dam, where you had the fourth dam herself, the 49er Mare Scoop the Gold, of course, was a stakes winner, and she produced a high yield. Who, you know, won the
sure.
Bluegrass, the Hopeful. So he was a grade one winner. So when people are looking at pedigree on the catalog page, what they see is no stakes production under the first three dams. However, as you point out, all the sires were outstanding. So this is the difference when it comes to how something is commercial versus, you know, quite a lot of good sire, you know, genetic markers, ancestors in this horse's pedigree. Certainly, what you just read off is an unbelievable mix of speed and stamina from the sire and his thing all the way through the female family of this. So whoever, you know, with this horse going for $1,000, what happens is it's the first crop cheap stallion. It's good for $6,500, that's Britannico. He didn't have that quote-unquote black type on the catalog page. And the breeder wanted to sell, from what I've read, and put the horse through without any reserve. So all of that took place as a yearling. As a two-year-old, you know, he made $35,000. Some of those same qualities applied for that price, but he had a really good workout. I think he worked in 33 for three furlongs. And, you know, it's a great case for how this game is, you know, within the reach of a lot of people when you look at it, right?
That's one of the. I mean, it's funny that this is, you know, Gary and Amr Zidane. You know, they paid, you know, seven figures. They're quite prepared to pay seven figures for prospects. So
yeah.
for this success, but it. You know, and I did make the distinction, Sid, that, yeah, we all could have bought this horse for $35,000, you know, still needed to be put into the hands, you know, of somebody that would lean on him. And that's part of this. I mean, you know, the Baffert part of the equation. And, you know, make no mistake. I mean, he asks a lot of these trainees. And it was pretty obvious to anybody watching that he was as surprised as anybody else. That this horse stayed and won. All you had to do was watch that, you know, essentially the mile and a 16th work from 2 weeks ago. I mean, nobody works these horses as far and as long and as fast as Baffert does. And the fitness quality here, and the fact that this horse, you know, this horse with that kind of a stout pedigree, you know, I haven't even gotten to the, you go further in the pedigree, and there's Nijinsky, and there's Graustark, and I mean, it's like the rawest, you know, heaviest boned and toughest series of broodmare sires you could put in a female family.
Yeah, and when you get back to the pedigree, you know, Paul Mellon,
Louis B. Mayer,
Mayor Humphrey, you know, G. Watt Humphrey's father. So you're getting back to some, you know, and even closer up, Brushwood Stable. But, you know, when you have horses like, you know, Unbridled in the family, I mean, you know, that's pretty serious. The female family on the catalog page gets a lot of black type as the further you go back. And I want to stress what you just said, because that's a really important part of this. You know, everybody knows Baffert usually gets the highest grade draft picks from any of these sales, yearling sales, two-year-old sales. So you're dealing with some of the highest quality stock that's handpicked by some of the best eyes in business, right? And so, as you point out, when they start going into training, he's working them against each other, right? So the level of quote-unquote practices, you know, say these were basketball players or baseball players, you know, they're working against each other. The level is so high to begin with. And if a horse can survive a program like that, that's a huge endorsement right away. You know, a lot of trainers don't have that luxury of working, you know, million-dollar horses against each other or $500,000 horses against each other and stuff like that. Meaning they don't have the opportunity to work before they even race some of the best stock against each other. And there's attrition that takes place, too. In that particular game, you know, like when you take, for example, this new entity Baffert has, BSF Bloodstock Group, that were part of Justify, and then they formed their own thing. Windstar kind of went their way, and SF and their partners, Starlight, they went their way, and they started, you know, this so-called Avengers group. They started buying a bunch of colts. They had tremendous success, you know, in that last, not this year, but last year, they had Charlatan and Authentic, and at Baffert, on top of that, had Nadal. It just so happened, by the way, last year, Authentic was the number three horse in that group, just like Medina Spirit was this year. The attrition that took place last year with Nadal and Charlatan left Authentic as the candidate, and he came through. And this year, you had, for Baffert, Life is Good and Concert Tour with Medina Spirit as the third guy. And, again, the attrition of Life is Good and Concert Tour, but Medina Spirit was there, right? And, you know, Steve Kornacki was great on that show, because all the experts, you know, went with the obvious choices. And Steve Kornacki, the MSNBC analyst, I loved it. He said, 12 to 1, you're giving me 12 to 1 on, you know, at the time, 12 to 1 on a Bob Baffert horse, let me have him. And, you know, he really nailed it right there, because basically this horse came out of that program. It didn't matter at that point what his sales price was. He had survived that program. He had thrived under it. And even though he wasn't the Life is Good element of it, he was the number three horse, and that turned out to be pretty good.
Say the least. And we won't worry yet about Preakness prospects, but there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun elements that I think if people, you know, I haven't seen all that much writing yet about, the deep dive, but I'm sure there will be from the pedigree side of things. You know, and I mentioned, you know, Nijinsky being in there, and then Grouse Stark and Prince Quillo, and even Beaupère going back as well. I mean, there's nothing but purple names that dot this pedigree, and it very interesting. And of course, I saw the piece today. I think Eric Mitchell wrote a piece for Bloodhorse about Castleton Lions, and what this means to them. And of course, you know, you've talked about Mr. Abu Ghazal.
Mr. Abu Ghazal. Yeah.
You know, who's a part of this story. And, you know, there's a lot of the natural themes in breeding in this country that are part of this, and that includes things. It doesn't have to be imported sires, not that there aren't some in this pedigree, obviously, but you know, people like Abu Ghazal, whose own understanding of pedigree and you know, of you know, the mixing of the blood comes into play, and had enough, you know, confidence to, you know, to back him, and you know, this really, obviously, it's going to give him a chance to, you know, to meet some better quality mares and be given every chance, Britannico, going forward.
And it's, again, another first crop success. You know, we talk frequently on here, it's, you know, for whatever reason, there's just this thing that it seems every sire, no matter what its price point, they seem to get the best mares they can in that first or second crop. And part of the reason is people are really, you know, even this mare, I read somewhere where, you know, Gail Rice, the breeder, had been talking about really matching up that mare. Whatever it is that they're using, their criteria, that people seem to study breeding to a first crop sire more so than they do a proven horse, because a proven horse is proven. At that point, people are kind of looking more, you know, to capitalize on, say, the commercial aspects of it. But when they're going to a first crop sire, I've just found people spend more time on mating first crop horses. They're looking for something. They're looking to either match the best pedigrees or the physiques or something. And the idea that people spend that much more time planning those matings seems to translate, Steve, to the success that first crop sires have. Now, there are writers, you know, my friend at the TDN, Chris McGraw, he's constantly, you know, against people breeding to first crop sires and so forth. You know, he thinks that people are just chasing, you know, whatever. But it just so happens that these first crop horses, and I've published articles on this, and there's a chart I did, in fact, on first and second crop success of horses, unproven stallions, that is. And it's startling, the success ratios people have with them. So, you know, this is yet another case of that. And don't forget, in this field, there were only three first crop sires. There was Britannico, M. Shawish with Sainthood, Ironicus with Helium. Was there another one? I'm not sure, but there weren't more than three or four. There was a fourth.
Wicked Strong?
So, but that wasn't first crop.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I think there was only three. So, you know, it's pretty amazing that that's an angle, statistically, that somebody actually put into their algorithm as and weighed it however they want. But, you know, I think it was something that the chart I published over the last 20 years, I think it was close to, you know, 46% or 40%, you know, somewhere between 40 to 46% of the success ratios were these first or second crop horses. So, and again, I'm pointing out really that it's the effort that the breeders put into planning those matings that usually, you know, just with anything, the more you study it and spend time, the perhaps the better the result. And I think that's one of the phenomena. Now, the other thing I wanted to bring up with you, which you touched on, is Osama Abu Ghazaleh, or Abu Ghazaleh. He's Chilean. However, he's of Middle Eastern descent. And there are so many connections to Amr Zadan with him. And it starts with the fact that Amr Zadan at one point had also bought into the California Chrome Syndicate. He was a part owner of California Chrome before California Chrome won the Dubai World Cup. It just so happens that California Chrome, while he was standing at TaylorMade, also shuttled to Sumaya Stud of Osama Abu Ghazaleh in Chile, okay? On top of that, Mr. Abu Ghazaleh also stood, as you pointed out, for Tonico in his first year at TaylorMade, which is where California Chrome stood, and that's who owned him in the second part of his career, that group. Now, here's some weird connections, too. Mr. Abu Ghazaleh had, you know, contracted to stand for Tonico at TaylorMade and was really looking forward to that when, at that year's Breeders' Cup, Not This Time got hurt and TaylorMade got into him and decided to stand him too late in the year. So what ended up happening was Not This Time is by Giants Causeway and Portonico is by Giants Causeway. And, of course, TaylorMade was invested in Not This Time. So what happened is that first year, Not This Time ended up getting the lion's share of the mares. He was, you know, extremely popular. He was a physical standout. Kind of overshadowed Portonico, even though Portonico actually had a better race record. And so that second year, Mr. Abu Ghazaleh must have decided, you know, must have been unhappy with the response to his sire, so he moved into Derby Dan for a year. So then he went to Derby Dan for the second year, and then for the third and fourth and now the fifth year this year, he's been at the Castleton Lions. So he's moved around. Now, ironically, while Portonico was at TaylorMade that first year, Mr. Abu Ghazaleh sent the mare to Not This Time, and that filly ended up being Princess Noor, the high-priced two-year-old filly that Amr Zadan bought. And so this connection between Amr Zadan and Osama Abu Ghazaleh is really interesting. It's like a uncle-nephew, father-son type of relationship. Amr Zadan is 46 and Abu Ghazaleh is like 76, 77. And Mr. Abu Ghazaleh had actually called up Amr Zadan and told him about Princess Noor being in that sale. Frank Taylor, who stood Not This Time, had told Amr Zadan about it as well. And so they checked out this filly and they ended up paying, you know, $1.3 million or whatever it was for that filly. It was a big price for her. And then later, Mr. Abu Ghazaleh had told Amr Zadan, hey, by the way, this, you ought to look at this colt by my stallion Portonico. I'm not telling you to buy him, but he's a beautiful colt. He moves really well, yada, yada, yada. Well, Amr Zadan decided to take a look at him, told Gary Young about him. They all liked him, Baffert liked him. And so Amr Zadan bought that colt too, but Amr Zadan told me he really bought that colt because Mr. Abu Ghazaleh didn't tell him to buy him, but because it was his stallion and so forth and the relationship they have. So when you said earlier about Abu Ghazaleh's relationship with Zadan, it really is quite significant in the story.
Big time. And, you know, and Gary, it was funny because Gary yesterday, when when he went over the list of you know, 2 year olds at the OBS sale, that he was, you know, that he said he didn't have a big list because, you know, think it was such a convoluted season last year when it came to,
right,
the in training sales and delays and so forth. So he had a fairly short list, and sure enough, there's this Bratanico that when Zidane, you know, said, you know, take a, he said, all right, he's on my list, actually. All right. So it really, there was a harmony that, you know, that came together to make this all happen. And, you know, there's actually, you know, with Bratanico specifically, there's a harmony too that, it should be noted, and I'm sure that, you know, people that glossed over him in these first couple of seasons will start to see it now. But you know, it's something you've riffed on before. Secretariat appears, you know, as he does so frequently, you know, with the, you know, the broodmare sire strength of both Terlingua and Weekend Surprise, top and bottom in the same position. In the fourth generation of Bratanico, you know, very notably the, you know, Terlingua, dam of Stormcat, sire of Giant's Causeway, and Secretariat with Weekend Surprise, dam of AP Indy. And whenever Weekend Surprise's name comes up, so does Del Carroll's name, because if it wasn't for Del's work, if it wasn't for Del's work on Weekend Surprise, there's no AP Indy.
Yeah. So it's a, It's very harmonious, as you say, and it's also interesting because there were three Giants Causeway stallions that had their first crop last year. Not this time. Bratanico and Brody's Cause. And ironically, in each of those cases, Bob Baffert had their best stakes winners. Princess Noor for Not This Time. Medina Spirit for Bratanico. And for Brody's Cause, the name escapes me, but it's that 220,000 filly by Brody's Cause, K-something, that won her debut in a stakes race for Bob Baffert. That was a Brody's Cause stakes winner. One of your listeners will, you know, chime in with one, it, I'm sure.
She ran the other day. Starts with a K. I talked to one of the David Burnson was there. I stood in front of David. Calypso.
So it's, you know, it's really quite something that the three Giants Causeways all had a representative with Baffert, and they all became,
Sid, didn't you write about this last year or the year before about Baffert having Baffert?
Yeah, he always has the best representative of every stallion. Exactly.
It's the craziest underpinning of all the things that, you know, the successes that he has. You wrote about that a couple, I think last year or the year before.
Yeah, I have, and I've listed all, you know, and they're not all big name horses either, obviously, you know.
No.
So it is, of course, that Brody's Cause one, Calypso, she was, you know, a fairly expensive one, I think like $220,000 or something. Princess Noor, of course, was 1.3, And the Princess Noor story, by the way, Amr Zidane had put in his mind that he was only going to go to 750 for that horse, and they were bidding on that show, and he was out at his home in the Middle East somewhere when the bidding started. It went to a million, and he finally went to a million, and he was going to pull the plug, and Baffert told him, just keep going on this filly. You know, whatever we get her for, I'll make sure she's worth that as a broodmare. And Amr told me this. And so he kept going and he went to 1.3 or whatever it was. And he said it was only because of Bob Baffert that he went that high. And of course, she ended up being a grade one, multiple grade one winner. She then got hurt, but they bred her to Into Mischief this year. I guess they're counting days as to when she's in foal, but she's slated to be sold in foal to Into Mischief at the Fazy Tipton November sale this year. And of course, she's going to make a hell of a lot of money in foal to Into Mischief, right?
You would think. You would think. Well, I'm excited for what's ahead too. He's obviously going to have to face off, against a lot more. You would think more pace pressure. We'll see if Caddo River is going to be participating. Based on Bradcock's yesterday, we'll see. And we talked about Concert Tour's presence, Stablemate presence in terms of speed. That'll take that just looking at this list right now, Sid, Concert Tour to some degree might pose the biggest obstacle to Medina Spirit in Baltimore.
Yeah, I have to check with them to make sure he's definitely going. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah. Baffert gave it the green light other day. Yeah.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah. He's set.
Yeah, that's gonna be really something, huh?
We'll see. We'll see who else throws in. Let's touch on Malathat, even though we had discussed her along the path.
Yeah.
Curlin just doesn't stop getting classic horses, male or female. But this was a family, obviously, that it was, I don't want to say predestined, but Dreaming of Julia herself and Dream Rush, her debut.
Yeah, I mean,
this is bred
by Stone Street. They are just such a top breeder. This filly was a $1,050,000 Keeneland September yearling. What can you say? Out of Dreaming of Julia by AP Indy, she's just one of those dream horses that has the pedigree and has run to it, and will just make an exceptional broodmare obviously down the road. And so far we've got her racing career to look forward to more this year. But, Curlin is just one of those stallions that, he was a classic horse, one of those horses that was, stayed 10 furlongs. And those types of horses tend to be overshadowed in the breeding business, even if they're at the highest level. We've seen through the years so many of these types, passed by. If you look at a horse like Secretariat, for example, a Triple Crown winner, foal of 1970, and another foal of 1970 was a Mr. Prospector, who was a sprinter. But it was Mr. Prospector that became, the big stallion. In Curlin's case, he's one of these horses that you have to really value so much because he is that classic horse that's firing classic horses, and he gets enough speed into them for them to have an impact at two as well, which is so important. And because of that combination, every year he seems to have, every year he's got contenders, it seems, in the classics, right? And they're now extremely sought after. And there's certain stallions, classic lines that he even blends with so well and one of them is AP Indy, the AP Indy line, AP Indy and his son, which adds even more classic heft to those pedigrees, and yet he blends so well with them. And Deputy Minister is another. And so, you know, he, I think, has single-handedly put more classic blood into the population. I mean, he's a genetic gem. He's a resource, in my opinion, you know. Down the road, we're going to really appreciate what Curlin has brought to pedigree.
And of course, his son's all starting to get, you know, get going as well at stud. There was one thing, Sid, before we go. We had Todd on Monday, and it sort of brought it up, you know, kind of for fun and tongue in cheek, you know, because of his. You know, we talk about Baffert's training of top sons and daughters of stallions. The list of the stallions that Todd has produced was really on display over the weekend, not just in Louisville, but particularly in Louisville. Between Britannico, there was Leem's Map, of course, participating in the, you know, in the dead heat. There was Daredevil with the La Troyenne winner with She Dares the Devil. Yep. And in fact, Nick Tamaro yesterday or Monday pointed out that the top five finishers in the La Troyenne, all from sires that Todd trained. Todd himself had Dr. Post win the Westchester, a quality road son, and another one of his. There was also that nice Supremacy by Constitution. I mean, it was a, you know, just a panorama of Todd trainees at stud.
There's a secret among people in the breeding business that when, you know, when a stallion goes to stud, one of the first things we look at is if it was a Todd Pletcher trained horse. Like if I see a new stallion going to stud and it's a Todd Pletcher trained horse, I give that horse extra weight as for success as a stallion. This is a well-known secret that now is in the general population, but we've been doing this for a while. That the Todd Pletcher factor always weighs in when you're looking at a stallion prospect. I mean, this goes back, you know, More Than Ready, for example, Scat Daddy, it's a long running thing, and people are catching on to it. But that's whenever I'm evaluating a new stallion, the first, you know, we always look at who trained the horse too, and trust me, there's some trainers, which I won't name. If it's trained by them, it gets negative marks. But if it's trained by Todd Pletcher, that's a plus 10 on the scale of 10. He gets that plus 10 points.
Well, and you know, there's obviously, you know, it's obviously always evolving and changing. And, you know, we're waiting for the Always Dreamings, for instance, and so forth. But an Audible, you know, his spring, they're coming. More Than Ready continues. Mishawish came up earlier today. It's Violence. What about Violence, of course, at Hillendale, and Uncle Mo now, and you know, what the sons of Uncle Mo, you know, what they're doing. Vino Rosso is going to, you know, obviously those babies are coming down the pike. It's an amazing. You know, not everyone obviously hits.
It's very difficult for a stallion to make it to begin with.
Yeah.
But the percentage of those that are Todd Pletcher trained horses
amazing.
Is off the charts.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing. And
English Panel was another Todd Pletcher trained horse.
Sure.
And he's a turf horse, and look how he has done.
Yep.
You know, it's just really phenomenal when you. When you think about it, and the thing with the Todd Pletcher horses are these horses, unlike the Bob Baffert horses, who are mostly dirt horses, the Todd Pletcher horses encompass a wide range, and that's another really important element to it.
That's a good point. I'm looking at this list. Daredevil's not even on it, and he's going to obviously go back on it with his return to the U.S. But it's amazing.
Todd Fletcher had a horse. If you remember the expensive Unbridled Song horse Dunkirk.
I love Dunkirk. We had a Dunkirk filly, William's Lucky Gray, that we claimed, and we loved. I mean, she was terrific.
Yeah. Well, Dunkirk, believe it or not, in his year was the leading freshman sire that year before he got sold abroad. But, you know, I'm just saying, you can pick out any horse. I mean, even a horse like Dunkirk, who's not even a stud here anymore, he went to Japan, what led the first crop stallion championship in his year? And not even a stakes winner. So, you know, that's what I mean about the Todd Fletcher horses. You know, they really hit at alarming rates.
Well, we didn't even mention Spitestown and
Fleet. Oh, yeah. I mean, those are the ones.
We forgot about him.
The well-known ones, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I mean. It goes back so long, Steve, because, you know, horses like More Than Ready and Spitestown, stalwarts, right? These are horses in their 20s now. So that's what I mean, how far it goes back.
Well, we've got a Derby winner and an Oaks winner. We've got plenty more action lying ahead. And, Sid, this is always one of my favorite conversations, as you know, culminates in a lot of ways. We do so much Derby Trail discussion and analysis of the three-year-olds, and you know, now the rubber is hitting the road, and we got at the same time both a surprising and unsurprising result on Saturday.
Yeah, that's well put. Yeah, that's really well put.
Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale and, of course, Sid and the team at Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. And there's still, you know, we're still covering mares. We still got time yet through May here. Some late covers. And, Sid, you know, if you've got people want to touch base with Sid about some late season deals, because those are out there for you, and Sid can help you on that front. As well. So, Sid, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll talk next week.
You got it, Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, and another good weekend for Hill & Dale when it came to results on the racetrack. Let's take our only timeout of the day, because we got a busy 90 minutes ahead. Make it 87 minutes. When we come back, I've got to get Bill Downs in from Indiana and Brendan Walsh. Top of the hour, we will reveal your class of 2021 when it comes to the Hall of Fame. Brian Bouye joins us from the Hall right at 11 when the news drops. All right? You'll be the first to know. And then Paul Matisse. We'll see what kind of a Derby Oaks weekend Paul had with his annual postscript. He'll go through the cards, and we'll see what he learned, what went right, what went wrong. Second half at the races. SiriusXM back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents